I also want to acknowledge the different organizations that have that are being represented here. I noticed there are people from, in addition to our organizations, there are people from Lakas Diwa and Makabayan. These are Filipino youth organizations in New Jersey. And if anyone else, yeah. I'm sure I'm...
Pintados.
Yeah, and of course, we're in the Prison Moratorium Project, who's also participating in this event tonight. Also, we have people from NODOTOL, Korean Community for Development. Koreans for Community Development. Okay, sorry. and then also joining us later on will be a representative from ALDEF, Asian American Legal Defense and Education Fund. And of course, all of you in the room are from different places. So we thank you, we first and foremost thank Prison Moratorium Project for allowing us to have this event here in so short notice. And we also thank the speakers, especially Marique, for coming from so far away, but yet so close to in our hearts. Marie is the Secretary General of Karapatan. It's a national human rights alliance in the Philippines. She's here in the U.S. On her speaking tour. And basically, she's going to be sharing with us about her work in the Philippines. And also, we're going to be starting to make the connections between what's happening in our community here in the U.S. as well. And our families, of course, the Philippines. So, did I miss anything?
Yeah, just to also more information. Marie has been, like Matilda said, she's been on a speaking tour since December. So she's traveled both United States and Canada. Marie's been very active in the people's movement in the Philippines since 1970s, pre-martial law. And actually, during martial law, was a political prisoner herself, as well as members of her family. In fact, members of her family were actually not only incarcerated, but killed under the Marcos regime. She's, in addition to being SecGen of Karapatan, she's also SecGen of CELDA, which is the mass an affiliate of the Karapatan Alliance, but a mass organization addressing the political prisoner situation in the Philippines. So. We're very honored to have her here this evening in New York. So,
take a look. So give it up for Marie.
Thank you very much, Matilda and Bern, and from the members of the National Council and the member organizations of Karapatan. I bring to you the warmest solidarity greetings.
Sorry.
We are very glad that this forum is being conducted here in the United States, especially at a time that the Philippines is experiencing the most brutal attacks on human rights, reminiscent of the viciousness of the low-intensity conflict years of the Aquino regime. On this occasion, allow me to share with you what is happening in my country, which has been pronounced by the fearless imperialist power in the world today, the United States of America, as the second front on the war on terror. I will try to describe to you the effects of this so-called war, especially its impact on human rights of the Filipino. My sharing will also show to you the reasons why this war of terror is being waged in my country and how come this atrocity can happen with seeming so much ease. And because the state is mandated by our constitution to protect and defend the rights of the Filipino citizens, a look into the political leadership is necessary. I'll just stay here this side because I'll be manning this presentation to you, okay. On January 20, 2001, Gloria Macapagal Arroyo, or GMA as we call her, garnered the distinction of becoming the second woman president of the Philippines and the second leader catapulted to the presidency by a people's uprising that ousted a corrupt and inept president in the person of Joseph Estrada. But unlike Ed Sawan's favorite, see, we have two EDSAs already, no? EDSA 1 and EDSA 2. EDSA 1's favorite, and like EDSA 1's favorite, former President Corazon Aquino, Gloria Macapagal Arroyo is not the popular choice for the presidency. She was just the person in the right position at the right time, she being the vice president during the time of EDSA 2. Like Cory Aquino, however, she became America's girl very early in her presidency. Like Cory Aquino and the presidents before and after her, Gloria is becoming the number one violator of the Filipino people's rights in so short a time. GMA, in fact, is sounding out more like the hated dictator Marcos by the day. Unlike her predecessors, however, Gloria is unmatched in the history of the Philippine presidency in selling and surrendering Philippine sovereignty to American imperialist interests. Instead of offering some relief to the economic crisis, GMA continued to implement the policies of globalization, liberalization, and privatization, bringing the economy further down the drain. Because of the onslaught of globalization, many firms were forced to close shop or retrench, displacing thousands of workers. 152 establishments closed down in the first 2 months of 2002 alone. 671 firms downsized their workforce due to economic reasons. An estimated 20,962 workers were displaced due to closures and retrenchments for the first 2 months of the same year. This trend has become more rampant, with an estimated 355 workers being retrenched daily in the first 2 months of 2002, compared to only 198 workers in the same period of 2001. Similarly, agriculture is greatly affected by the policies of globalization. The Philippines' entry into the World Trade Organization is creating havoc in the agricultural sector. The country is flooded with imported agricultural products, which kills many of the agriculture's small and medium-sized business. Even rice, which is the primary produce and staple of Filipinos, has to be imported because the government willingly allowed itself to be bound to the WTO imposition of importing rice, even if the country can most viably produce the commodity. Massive land grabbing and land use conversion by the wealthy compradors, landlords, and capitalists continue to erode whatever gains the supposed Comprehensive Agrarian Reform Program, or CARP, of the present and previous administrations brought. President Arroyo vaunted that her economic policies are sound, while the country's economy continued to flounder. She did nothing to the workers' demands to a legislated 125 peso wage increase. But she was quick to increase the salaries of the members of the Armed Forces of the Philippines to buy out their loyalties so that they remain allegiant to her presidency. She gave no offer of relief for the urban poor, who faced demolition every day in spite of the government's pronouncements that there will be a suspension of demolition of squatter families. Prices of oil and other products have gone on regular increases, rendering the poor to continue living in abject poverty. Even the cost of basic social services like health and education have gone beyond the reach of the many poor because of privatization and deregulation. These economic policies, boasted by administration officials as resting on sound fundamentals, have created for the country a large foreign borrowing valued at $52.4 billion in 2001, and a budget deficit at 160 billion pesos, way above the projected 130 billion pesos for last year. What these figures translate to are the following facts, which even government data cannot hide. 40% of the 80 million population, or 31.3 million, is considered poor. 16.5% go to bed hungry. We in the progressive movement believe the real picture is much worse than this. It is not surprising, therefore, that the country's top export now is labor. The diaspora of thousands of our workers continue, and the country is bled dry of precious human resources, or so-called modern-day heroes, who seek opportunities in other shores. Government statistics peg the number of Filipinos living for overseas jobs at 2,000 a day. But even as our migrant workers prop up the ailing economy, the government in many instances does not protect the rights of the migrant workers in their host countries. It would take organized groups such as Migrante to raise house of protest to get the action of the government. Much worse is the fate of Filipinas who leave the country supposedly as entertainers or caregivers, but end up as prostitutes in Japan, no less than the government is involved in the legal trafficking of Filipino women. Clearly, the GMA administration is not a cut different from her predecessors. The presidential political will, which many expected her to exercise in favor of the larger poor majority, was applied not to eradicate the causes of festering poverty and insurgency, but was utilized to perpetuate the same order of things in the country. President Arroyo continued the policies of her predecessors that brought the country to its present abject state. Big business, landlords, capitalists, and politicians continue their dominance and hold on the Philippine economy and politics. Indeed, GMA is the representative of this powerful elite that decides the shape of Philippine societies for centuries. Continuing the people's woes, impunity, militarization, and other human rights violations. To assuage the progressive section of the population fighting for change, GMA, earlier in her term, showed a semblance of implementing reforms. She released a number of political prisoners, albeit through a meticulous process that made it difficult for some in the list of approved for release to go out of prison. She bowed down to the U.S. State Department's demand not to release Donato Continente, the political prisoner who is now 13 years in jail and wrongfully convicted of assassinating in 1987 the American military advisor Colonel James Rowe. She initiated the revival of peace negotiations scuttled by former President Joseph Estrada. She announced a policy of all-out peace rather than all-out war espoused by Estrada to quell the Moro Rebellion in Mindanao. But subsequent actions would divulge the real intent of her deeds and pronouncements. While the peace talks with the Communist Party of the Philippines, New People's Army, and the National Democratic Front of the Philippines, or the CPP-NPA-NDFP, started off to two meetings, nothing substantial was achieved because the government was not serious in honoring the 10 agreements previously signed by the preceding administrations with the CPP-NPA-NDFP. Of particular irritant issue is the implementation of the Comprehensive Agreement on Respect for Human Rights and International Humanitarian Law, which was hammered out and agreed into by the Ramis administration and the CPP with the CPP-NPA and approved and signed by the Estrada administration. Several times during the first negotiation under the Arroyo administration, government panelists hedged to implement the agreement. While the talks were ongoing, the armed forces of the Philippines continued its military deployments of big number of troops in suspected bases of the CPP-NPA-NDFP, especially after the negotiated release of intelligence officer Colonel Noel Buwan, who was held captive by the NPA in southern Tagalog for a considerable length of time. Oplan Makabayan, or Operation Plan Nationalist, Estrada's counterinsurgency program, was quietly implemented in the rural areas, especially in southern Tagalog, where the plan was most brutally applied to hapless peasants, leaders of legal mass organizations perceived to be supportive of the left's program. The target of the repression, however, are the leaders of the progressive political party Bayan Muna, or People First, who, despite the attacks, managed to get 3 representatives of the party occupy seats in the Legislative House of Representatives by winning in the popular election of May 2001. The relentless attacks brought forth the massive and gross human rights violation cases, the intensity and brutality of which equal those of the Marcos Martialo years and the low-intensity conflict of the Aquino years. Sad to say that after the Aquino regime, it is only under the GMA presidency that human rights workers have become subject of vicious attacks again. By July 2001, barely 6 months into Gloria's presidency, Karapatan lost 2 human rights workers, Milagros Belga of Laguna and Senon Montipon of Zamboanga del Norte. Milagros Belga was stabbed and gunned down inside her house and in front of her kids. Senon was stabbed 22 times, his body found buried in a shallow grave a few meters from their house, hands still tied in his back and mouth gagged. The manner of their deaths would characterize the brutality of the violations and the boldness of the perpetrators. The viciousness and brutality of the attacks, the counterinsurgency operations that is now unleashed by the armed forces of the Philippines against members of legal progressive organizations, as well as the armed revolutionary organizations. Now, 2 years after Arroyo, 6 volunteers of Karapatan have already been killed. The same kind of attacks were applied by the AFP's Southern Command and other units of the AFP to the Bangsamoro peoples in Basilan, Sulu, Zamboanga, and other Moro areas. In fact, the government, in its supposed campaign to annihilate the Abu Sayyaf group, a local bandit group operating in the islands of Basilan and Sulu, allowed the Secretary of the Department of Justice to issue a memorandum dated July 13, 2001, authorizing the members of the Armed Forces of the Philippines to effect warrantless arrests of and the setting up of checkpoints to apprehend suspected members of the Abu Sayyaf. This questionable memorandum gave the military the widest latitude to commit abuses, and soon Basilan and Sulu became under virtual martial law. For months before the arrival of U.S. troops, the Moro people were already subjected to intense militarization. Karapatan, together with other cause-oriented individuals and organizations, held fact-finding missions in war-torn areas of Basilan and Sulu in Mindanao to investigate the effects of the military operations among the civilian populations. Killings, including massacres and summary execution, forced disappearances, bombing, arbitrary arrests and detention, torture and displacement of communities were documented. We witnessed the utter dislocation and disenfranchisement of entire people in the name of, quote, fighting terrorism, unquote. In an interview with the deputy brigade commander of the military in charge of the operations against the Abu Sayyaf in Basilan, the military officer said that Basilan is their laboratory in going after so-called terrorists. He said that if their operations in Basilan bore positive results for the military, the same kind of operations will be done to other areas and applied to other groups like the CPP-NPA, the Moro Islamic Liberation Front, or the MALF, and the Moro National Liberation Front, or the Moro National, or the MNLF. In the meantime, the Arroyo government showed its intolerance to opposition and dissent. Amid deafening calls for increases in wages and cuts in unjustifiably high power rates, Arroyo employed McCarthyist tactics against people's organizations, calling them communists. She branded militant trade unions as terrorists and called human rights advocates Abu Sayyaf lovers. In her tirades, she had lumped together legal progressive organizations and the underground revolutionary movement. The implication, of course, was that the above-ground critics of the administration may be suppressed with the same fascist force that the AFP uses against the underground movement. The September 911 attacks would exacerbate the already deplorable state of human rights in the GMA presidency. Gloria's dogged subservience to the imperial interests of the U.S. is unparalleled in the history of the presidency. Without being asked, she offered her government support to George Bush's war on terror, hoping, like those of her predecessors, to get economic and military aid from the U.S. government. This move opened up a new phase in America's political military offensive in the world. GMA's new policy enabled the return of U.S. military intervention in the Philippines and the implementation of its hegemonic plans in the Southeast Asian region. Immediately after the U.S. military takeover of Afghanistan, the U.S. government announced that the Philippines is the second front on the war on terror. In the last quarter of year 2001, U.S. military troops began pouring into Mindanao in the southern Philippines, the site of the Bangsamoro struggle for self-determination. In cooperation with U.S. troops, the armed forces of the Philippines launched fresh attacks ostensibly against the Abu Sayyaf. Yet, tactically, the target of the attacks were the Moro National Liberation Front, or the MNLF, and the Moro Islamic Liberation Front, or the MILF, two rebel formations aimed at Moro national liberation. By January 31, 2002, U.S. troops with special operation forces participated in the combat operations against the Abu Sayyaf. Despite protests of progressive groups and the members of the Senate and Congress that this arrangement is violative of the Constitution, the U.S. troops and the armed forces of the Philippines went on with the Balikatan 02-1 military exercises that both governments announced would only take 6 months. Arms, equipments, and military hardware were brought in by American troops to Mindanao and Cebu. The nature of this were not made public, or the numbers were never divulged to the public. Soon, fightings with the Abu Sayyaf were conducted. Reports of arrests or killings were issued only by the military. There was no opportunity to verify whether those killed or apprehended are real Abu Sayyaf members. Soon, too, we would be receiving reports of cases of human rights violations in Zamboanga and Basilan. On March 19, 2002, four Moro men were killed in Barangay Makiri, Lantawan, Basilan. They were presented by the military as Abu Sayyaf members. Relatives came to Karapatan and told us that the men were ordinary Moro farmers. They were accosted by the military when they were trying to evacuate their homes to flee from an encounter between the military and the Abu Sayyaf. On March 30, 2002, reports of illegal searches of Moro homes in Zamboanga City reached Karapatan. 7 persons were arrested, all of them declared by the military as Abu Sayyaf members. Karapatan investigations would reveal that these are ordinary Moro folks. One of the victims, in fact, was a policeman, a Muslim policeman. On April 7, 2002, a fishing boat was bombed by a Philippine Navy patrol boat, killing 2 fishermen and a boy. According to the military, they bombed the boat because the U.S. military spy plane supplied the intelligence report that the boat was that of Abu Sayyaf members. Those killed were ordinary Moro fishermen. Basilan Governor Wahab Akbar talked to the families, and before Karapatan could reach the relatives of the victims to encourage the families to file cases, the military have settled with the families. There were other reports of cases of disappearances in Basilan, but we were not able to document many of these. The documented cases, however, were presented to us through testimonies made by the relatives of the victims during the hearings conducted by the International Solidarity Mission, which Karapatan and other progressive organizations like Bayan, Bayan Muna, and others mounted to look into the impact of the joint military training exercises. One of the highlights of the mission was the case of an American trooper's shooting of a Moro civilian inside his own house. In the early morning of July 25, 2002, elements of the AFP together with two U.S. soldiers raided the house of Buyong Buyong Isnijal in Tuburan, Basilan. One of the U.S. soldiers shot the surprised Isnijal in front of his terrorized family. The soldiers took him to a hospital and immediately transferred him to the military hospital inside the Southern Command in Zamboanga. Later in September, we would be able to get the affidavit of Buyong Buyong, who is now detained at the Basilan Provincial Jail. He sticks to his story that an American soldier shot him. The Philippine government, instead of looking into the allegations, chose to deny it and protected the Americans. GMA herself called the International Solidarity Mission participants as liars and communists. The military even presented a Filipino soldier to own up to the crime, just so the controversy would die down. The incident created a national focus on the U.S. troops violating human rights in the country. Also, America's real intent of staying in the country as long as they wanted would be exposed as 160 U.S. Special Operation Forces remained in Basilan even after the withdrawal of U.S. troops and equipments on July 31, the supposed formal end of joint military exercise against the Abu Sayyaf. It would also be evident that the Abu Sayyaf was not the target of the exercise. The group is just used as a pretext for America's enduring war of terror in Southeast Asia. These exercises proved to us that the GMA administration would so easily allow the selling out of our nation's sovereignty to superpower America. No sooner than the exercises were finished, U.S. State Secretary Colin Powell paid a visit to the Philippines and on August 9, 2002, declared the CPP-NPA as well as Professor Jose Maria Sison as among the list of terrorist organizations and list of terrorists respectively. Our very own president would concede to this labeling, even as she was cautioned that this would prejudice the peace negotiations with the CPP-NPA and the FP. Indeed, in America's and Arroyo's scheme of things, all were falling into place for President Arroyo's announcement of building a, quote, strong republic, unquote, during her State of the Nation address in late July. We would be witnesses to what kind of a strong republic she meant. In less than 2 years in office, the Arroyo regime, based on Karapatan's documentation, had already committed 1,543 cases of violations of civil and political rights as of November 29, 2002. These cases involved 43,462 victims. 167 of them were killed. 27 victims of abductions, with 16 involuntary disappearances, 119 were tortured, 841 were arbitrarily arrested, 19,299 were harassed. Military deployments continue their counterinsurgency operations in the countryside. The deployment is augmented by the recruitment of men, women, and even minors into the paramilitary organizations. Peasants and indigenous peoples suffer the brunt of these operations, especially in mining areas or areas where so-called development projects are being implemented. The military named the latest counterinsurgency program Oplan Gorjanat, evoking an image of the government as a hero to cut the insurgent knot of the people. But this proverbial sword being unleashed by the Macapagal Arroyo administration has proven itself as an instrument of suppression. With its refusal to formally talk peace with the rebels in exchange for dubious back-channel talks, the Arroyo regime has shown its preference for fascism instead of addressing the roots of insurgency. Amidst all this looms the U.S., with its economic interests being protected by the AFP and the Arroyo government. Not content with having the Philippine government as proxy force against its enemies, the Bush government declared the Philippines as their next target for military intervention. Following the Secretary of State's designation of the Communist Party of the Philippines and the NPA as foreign terrorist organizations, Arroyo immediately declared an all-out war campaign against the communist rebels. After these pronouncements, the U.S. and the Philippine governments have worked out beautifully a path to make it hard for progressive organizations and the revolutionary groups to protest their machinations, the recent one of which is the signing of the Mutual Logistics Support Agreement. This agreement, which is considered by many of our legislators as a questionable agreement, was treacherously signed by military officials only of both the U.S. and the Philippines. In its most horrifying provisions, the MLSA would drag the Philippines into a war not of our own making. It signifies, too, the direct U.S. military intervention in the country, as virtual basing rights in the Philippines have been accorded to the U.S. military through this agreement. The MLSA also allowed the U.S. troops to take part in counterinsurgency operations. The Arroyo government has also initiated the drafting of an anti-terrorism bill, which, much like the U.S. Patriot Act, seeks to define and criminalize actions that the government views as terrorism. In the government's view, such acts range from kidnappings to indiscriminate bombings to acts of protests, peaceful assemblies, and various recognized freedoms of speech and redress of grievances. If enacted to law, the bill will empower authorities to conduct arbitrary searches and seizures, expand the coverage of warrantless arrests, intercept communications, inquire into bank deposits, intrude into the right to privacy, and abandon the rules on presumption of innocence of suspected terrorists. This could very well become the mother of all repressive laws. The approval of such bill will achieve for Arroyo what three previous administrations could not do. Such bill will result in the criminalization of militant actions by cause-oriented individuals and groups critical to government policies. Defense Secretary Angelo Reyes and National Security Advisor Roy Logoles have successfully enhanced Macapagal Arroyo's witch hunting abilities. As if the terrorist tags are not enough, this cable of militarists recently branded several schools in the Philippines as, quote, high-risk, unquote, havens of terrorists because of their militant student activism. He named the University of the Philippines, Polytechnic University of the Philippines, University of Santo Tomas, Far Eastern University, University of the East, and even Rizal National High School as high-risk havens of terrorists. Meanwhile, last October, Foreign Affairs Secretary Blas Ople went on a European junket to convince European states to turn against Jose Maria Sison, a political refugee in the Netherlands. On October 28, despite qualifying as a political refugee in the UN Refugee Convention, without convincing proof of his involvement in any terrorist activity, and without due process, the European Council labeled Sison and the NPA as terrorists. This came about despite the support of many European diplomats and parliamentarians behind Sison, that US officials put enormous pressure on European Council members to come up with a declaration is almost a foregone conclusion. The persecution of a foremost Filipino patriot and intellectual like Sison is in itself a depiction of the extent the Philippine and the US governments have been violating human rights. Yet beyond this, the terrorist tagging has its deep implications in the progressive mass movement in the Philippines and abroad. It could very well be a message that state terrorism is capable of running roughshod over people's rights and over any local or international law to get what it wants. The US wants to tell us that no one can stop the lone superpower from waging war in Iraq, North Korea, Colombia, or the Philippines in pursuit of expansionism and hegemony. With the Arroyo regime, it implies that it is willing to sacrifice the interests of the Filipino people to favor its own interests and that of the US. But what the Bush and Arroyo administrations fail to recognize, however, is that a strong and vibrant people's movement in the Philippines and abroad is very capable of posing a challenge to their warmongering designs. Our history, after all, is replete with events when the Filipino people, in solidarity with other oppressed people of the world, overcame great obstacles to triumphantly assert its rights and aspirations as a free nation. Yun na lang po. Maraming salamat. Conclusion.